You're listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
All right. Here we are, buddy. Thank you very much. Of course, Bob is out today. Mike is kindly sitting in. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure.
Mike and I have a new health and fitness podcast. I don't like calling it a health and fitness podcast. I was just thinking, I like calling it a fitness podcast.
Why? We talk health sometimes.
We sometimes, but it really
we talk mental health more than we talk
I
body health.
All right, so health and fitness, yeah. But it's not. It's really, when I think health, I think medical. And so I think, this is more fitness, stuff you can do.
It is, but it comes through the prism of health because
I must say, but since I've been on this meat diet, it's affected my health in a positive way.
Good.
So we'll talk about that.
Get your blood work done, though. Cause,
I did.
What's your testosterone at?
Didn't test that. But why? Why would I?
I mean,
think about it. With a prostate cancer, I want a low testosterone, and I don't feel like I have low testosterone right now. And my urologist measures it every time I go. I'm going in a couple weeks.
Wouldn't there be health problems that come with it if it was in the toilet?
If it was really in the toilet.
Dr. Baker had really low testosterone.
I heard, but that was after how long? How many years on that diet? Right.
Yeah.
But I did my cholesterol, highest HDL of my life.
That's awesome.
LDL.
Well, finally.
Lowest triglyceride of my life.
Finally, even MDs like you are getting it that eating cholesterol has no relationship to internal cholesterol.
There's still all this data about meat and animal fats and heart disease and early death and colon polyps.
Watch those studies.
I don't know what to do with that.
Watch those studies.
Here's what I'm convinced. What I'm convinced of is that the most important thing is this.
Yeah.
That's
visceral fat.
Visceral fat. Not visceral, but what they call central obesity around the waist. That is more important. That's so important that whatever other factors are going negative are overwhelmed by the positive benefit of losing that weight, which this diet does, and keeping it off.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's – let me give a little more information, everybody. Facebook, at Dr. Drew. Twitter, at Mike Catherwood. At This Life Podcast. At First Lady of Love. Join the email list at Dr.com. You get everything at Dr.com. All the weekly opium series and links to all the podcasts. Everything is there. Also, don't forget to click on the Hydrolife banner. Save on your next purchase if you click there and use the code DrDrew18. It's important that you stay hydrated, and this is the best product out there, simply. That's it.
It is awesome, man.
It's a great product.
Used it in this crazy summer heat.
The great Theo Vaughn will be here in mere moments.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. This past weekend, one of the fastest-growing comedy podcasts, twice a week on that show. I've been on that. I don't know if he's aired the one I did yet. We'll have to ask him about that. What are you doing?
I'm making a video with you on it.
Why?
Well,
I hope it's like a GIF or something. GIF. Hi. What are we doing here?
You're done.
Thank you. You and I were talking about a lot that's going on in the world of recovery.
Okay.
Were you a fan of the Dopey podcast?
Well, you introduced me to those guys, and that's why I know where this is going.
Well, when you say there's a lot going on in the world of recovery, that's the first thing that occurs to me.
Well, that wasn't what I want to talk to you about. Yeah. When Susan told me, I was like, what?
Yeah. Bob and I talked to Dave in detail. Here's what I think happened.
Okay.
If you had to guess.
You want me to tell you what happened? I know what happened.
Well, how do you know?
Because I know.
You know drug addicts.
Yeah.
Well, what's your bet?
Especially heroin addicts.
Well, hang on. And I know doctors. Yeah. So let's put it together.
He's in recovery, so he's probably having some anxiety, mental health issues.
Let me frame it better. He's getting a PsyD. He's getting his ass kicked at school.
Okay. No. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. Okay. So he's got a tremendous amount of stress and anxiety, and he's in recovery. So he goes and he gets some Valium or some shit, Xanax.
School.
You think it was just school?
No. What does everybody do to do better on their exams?
Adderall.
Absolutely.
So something, you know, Adderall. That he doesn't assume is going to throw him out,
yep.
Does.
Yep. Then
he's had a certain amount of sobriety, so his tolerance has gone way down.
Yep.
But his appetite's still as high as it ever was.
Yep.
He goes in, he gets one hot barrel, and he injects it, and he's dead.
The way Adderall works is a little bit more complicated. The way Adderall works is it usually takes them about 6 months before they go out. Magically, injury. Magically, pain pills.
Yeah.
Magically, on we go. And once you're in it, you're in it. All the obfuscation and bullshitting starts. Ugh. So good times. This is a horrible disease.
It's a fatal one, remember.
I had a dream about you last night. I didn't know we were working together.
Were we fucking?
No, we were not. But it involved your sister, strangely. And your sister
Were you guys fucking?
No.
No.
But you were really excited to see her. And
that's definitely a dream, because that's not reality.
It was very strange. It had something to do, you know what I think it had something to do with? She said you were here having a big weekend for your daughter with the grandparents.
I was.
And somehow the daughter's enthusiasm became your sister, and your enthusiasm for your daughter became your enthusiasm for your – it was even your parents' enthusiasm for your daughter sort of got all mushed into this one little scene in my dream.
Okay.
So, but the comedy was your sister was a female version of you. It was not your sister.
It was not my real sister.
It was very funny.
I don't want to know the female version of me. That sounds shitty.
And then having you go after it, like, oh, it's so good to see you.
Really, so nice to see you too. It's like that Adam Sandler movie where he plays the woman. You know,
yes.
Just like I'm imagining me with long hair.
Oh, my God.
Hi there. Hello. I'm Michelle. You don't like that voice, dog?
The dog. Okay. Rex, like, how you doing? So are there other things going on in recovery you were thinking
about? Well, it's
about?
Demi Lovato.
What do you think about that?
I feel really bad for her.
I do, too.
I feel really bad for her, man.
I think she'll be okay.
And people at Access Hollywood were always asking me, they're like, how would, you know, people know she's a drug addict. How could she get drugs? Like, wouldn't people stop? And I go, do you know how many C-list shitbags want to surround themselves with Demi Lovato and are willing to do anything to just be a part of her crew? How many fucking scumbags?
Well, and then she knows that. She's an addict, and boom, it's game. Game on then.
Yeah, because, like, it sounds so trite to make the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde analogy, but it's not very trite.
That was about an alcoholic,
right? But my point is it's just such a played out analogy, but it's true in that even if to Demi Lovato's, not to her knowledge, the addict brain of hers,
yeah,
starts thinking before your normal brain can stop it.
Yes,
and so she already set up this battery of shitheads to surround her and get her coke and get her heroin and stuff.
Of course,
and I just feel really, really bad because I got clean, hopefully for good, when I was very young, a little younger than her. Mm-hmm. And it was practically impossible. And I had an awesome support network. And I was not rich. And I was not famous. I had no ability to get drugs. I was, you know, it was a do or die decision I had to make.
Yeah.
She has endless funds and a bunch of yes men.
Well, and to be fair, if she doesn't get it, that's risk. That's her. What her life is. That puts her life at risk.
But she doesn't strike me as someone who doesn't get it.
She strikes me as somebody dependent, and she needs to have autonomy in her sobriety. That's my bet. And if she doesn't gain that, she has to be fully autonomous in her own program.
Right.
I mean, for instance, I think you and I talked about this. We heard she had a sober coach.
Yeah.
Uh oh.
Yeah. That's
you know, it's like okay, 5 years of sobriety and a sober coach. No. So something was wrong there. Something was wrong. And it may be her, whatever, but it needs to be.
No, I'm telling you, there's a bunch of agents and managers that get in. They're like, okay, get back on tour and we'll send this sober coach with you.
I know. That's how it gets started.
You know, as opposed to, like, invest in your recovery.
Take what time you need to get it. It's over. Yeah, 100% that's how it works. What was the other thing I wanted to talk to you
about?
But
I feel bad for her because in the same vein as Chester, God rest his soul, like, whenever anybody's really open about their struggles, it always gives me it tugs on my heartstrings because it's not easy to do as a public figure.
Yeah, I found some sort of lyric from him. It ended up in one of my Google Docs. I don't know how, and it was "Dead by Sunset,"
"Dead by Sunrise,"
"Dead by Sunrise." Okay. Yeah, and the lyrics were there,
yeah.
and it was a and it was some new quotes from him about what that was all about.
Yeah, it's a terrible.
And
terrible.
It was about him believing he wouldn't make it to sunrise. It's like, ugh.
That was his side project. That was the name of his side project.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Well, it is because of those horrible feelings that eventually killed him. It's just too much, you know, a guy like that.
Absolutely. Much. But Demi Lovato kind of falls in that category. She's always been so open about not only eating disorders and food issues, but
eating, cutting,
self-harm and addiction. You know, like
bipolar.
Every other person in her line of work, and I don't mean specifically music. I mean pop star, female pop star, young, hot female pop star. It's always dehydration and exhaustion.
Right.
It's not. She's not really an addict. Oh no, and Demi Lovato's like, no, I got a serious drug problem.
Yeah.
Like I need help.
I have mental health issues.
Yeah,
and so do a lot of people. And here
that,
I go.
That I think she should be commended for that.
Oh,
and that's also why
I feel
extra sorry for her.
I have always been a big Demi Lovato fan for that reason, and she's a great performer. But
I'm a fan for other reasons, if you know what I mean.
You are a fan for another reason?
I'm a fan for
the whole picture.
A whole different reason.
Okay. I'm sure she likes that too.
That ass, if you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
Wow.
Oh, the producer just rang in.
I like it too.
Okay.
She's a full figured woman. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, she's a producer.
Susan's chiming in. Yeah.
So am I.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all good. It's all good.
I was thinking about that. I mean, if you have something really important to say, go ahead. Never mind.
What are you thinking about? What?
I was thinking about how it's the one big, huge, everybody bemoans the horrible part of social media and all the ills that it does. One of the great things specifically Instagram has done is it's finally given the power to straight men in the world of like modeling and fashion. Like for years,
so we don't have to have the
other
wave.
Women and gay guys
yeah.
made women get to size zero. Mm-hmm. And now through Instagram, you realize nobody likes that. All guys that want to have sex with women prefer big, nice, round tuchus and bosoms and a little bit of cushion in there in the fupa area. No, there's no guy that likes, you know, the 6-foot chick that's, you know, 105 pounds. And because the photograph appreciation world has been snagged away from magazines and you know, high level television, it's been given, like, we've now taken control. You can see now, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like the most popular women on Instagram, whether they're celebrities or not, they're all these kind of more full figure chicks. And I think that's a huge upside to, because like the standard.
Although now we have people doing plastic surgery to
yeah,
look
that's
like
insane.
Instagram
that's
models,
insane.
Like, you know, or to look like Instagram filters.
Yeah,
that's the really crazy.
The Snapchat ones. That literally they have plastic surgeons that are getting that request.
Yeah,
Stern said the funniest thing. He's like, yeah, I saw a guy coming out of a plastic surgeon with bunny ears on his head.
No, I know. That's what I said. With a weird bunny nose and flowers around their head. All right, we've got some emails here that came on our contact list. I have a friend looking for an alternative to Alcoholics Anonymous. She's not into the whole high power thing. You mentioned another program before in several podcasts, but I haven't been able to find it again. So I have two feelings about this.
I do too.
One is rational recovery, fine. Or
refuge.
Refuge, smart recovery, women in recovery. These are all 12.
I like refuge only because I know Noah, and he doesn't have any problems with.
But that's strictly locally here, though, right?
Is it?
Is it national now?
I don't know.
Refuge recovery. Okay. I like
The reason Noah Levine, who runs it, he wrote Dharma Punks. That's where he got famous. He has no problem with 12 steps and the model of 12 step.
He's been on this show, right, Susan? Yeah, he's been on this show. You can look, you can find it with older podcasts.
He's a devout Buddhist, yeah. And that's the only switch. Higher power is still
a
part of it.
Yeah,
you know? So that's why I like
it. Well, and so speak to that, because that's the other issue, which is when somebody says, I don't like the whole higher power thing.
That's the number one excuse I hear when people just don't want to go into recovery.
Correct.
You know, it's the number one. And because, look,
and here's by the way,
statistics are there. Most Americans don't like organized religion. No one goes to church anymore. It's not about that. It has nothing to do with
nothing.
This
well, you literally are
religious
taught,
deity.
You're literally taught, and if you're at a meeting, there are meetings that are highly religious, and you don't go to those if you don't dig that stuff. But you're taught that the higher power could be the laws of physics, this chair, whatever you want, just so you get out of your head. And believe that you don't have to be in control of everything, and you're not.
And the person who says that, I always say to them, I said, listen, do whatever the hell you want to do to get sober.
Yeah.
But the person who says, I'm not into it because of the higher power thing, is the person who really needs to understand what a higher power is.
Absolutely.
Because
as always.
That all it is about the humility to understand that there's greater powers than yourself, and you need to surrender to those things. Has nothing to do with God or anything. And if you're so pompous to believe that, like, yeah, well, I don't like that aspect of it, I'll go do it my own way, you're the number one person who needs the humility and to be humbled.
Yep.
Old country way, fuck your ass, make you humble.
Right.
That's right.
Camel clutch.
That's right. The great Iron Sheik.
Yeah. You know, you've got to take a good look at yourself. And again, we have no problem with these other programs. There's a guy named Keith Humphreys. If you go to drdrew.com, there's a Dr. Drew podcast with Keith Humphreys you can get right now. It's about 2 weeks back. When are we airing this?
I don't know, a couple weeks.
Yeah, should be 2 weeks back. And he is the head of addiction medicine at Stanford, and also a guy named John Kelly is also a podcast with
him. Stanford guide is up. It's up.
It's up, yeah, but it will have been 2 weeks ago when this airs.
I would like to add on, though, I do have one problem with one source of, like, one road of alternative recovery.
Okay, but first let me just say, okay. Harvard, the head of Harvard, head of Stanford are publishing Cochrane analyses that show that mutual aid societies, like all these we're talking about, yeah. have as good or better effect, evidence-based effect on addiction than any other treatment.
Right.
Think about that. And people are trashing it. Give me an effing break.
Go ahead. you don't want to do the work. That's the truth.
Yeah.
The people who trash it.
Yeah. So go ahead. What do you want to do?
I have a sincere problem with that drug that you take that makes you like allergic to alcohol.
Oh yeah.
I don't like it.
Abuse.
I don't like that.
Why not take naltrexone?
I don't like any of it.
Why?
Because abstinence based recovery for me is
the only. But naltrexone will make you crave it a little less and have a little less. A shittier response to it when you do.
But I know addict brain, even if it's not addictive, if I know something good is, if a pill or something I put in my body does something good to me, I'm going to abuse it. I'm going to overuse
it. It doesn't do anything good to you.
I'm going to get dependent on it.
It's a shot. Take once a month. It's actually shown to have pretty good results, but you don't feel it. You have no feeling from it.
But why? I mean, look, no one loves liquor more than I do.
Yeah. Okay, but I'm not arguing with you. I would much rather people listen.
Literally, nobody loves liquor more than me.
Literally, I am a fan of cravings. When people have cravings, I think it's a good thing.
Right.
We've got this industry built around. Oh my God, they're having a craving. What are their cravings? They're scared of what?
Same with food.
Cravings let you know your disease is alive and well, so you need to get to a meeting. If you don't have cravings, you feel like you have your act together. You're going to use.
Yeah.
So
or you're in hell.
Yeah,
you might not use, but you know, I was about 5-6 years in, and I had this idea that I just, yeah, well, I don't even think about drugs, man. I don't even think about drugs and alcohol.
There it is.
I didn't fall off the wagon. Yeah. I stayed clean, but I was mentally fucked
because you weren't going to meetings.
Yeah, it was just I thought that it was a cured disease.
Uh-uh.
That's the way I looked at it.
Oh yeah, that's not good. All right, here's another email. Hello, my children's father is suffering from a mental illness. Any questions on Facebook, by the way?
I don't know. Let me look.
He graduated from rehab until a couple of weeks ago, walked away from his job, home, everything. I don't know what to do. Everyone has disowned him. I'm the only one who continues to help him. How do I get him the help he needs? I don't quite understand what she described. He left treatment, I guess. He graduated, she says.
Hey, I think he left the house. Well,
yeah,
like, literally left home.
Well, he's using.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. She needs to go to Al-Anon and work a program in Al-Anon. And keep doing the best you can to get him into treatment.
I wonder if you can have him arrested, if there's some way to have him arrested.
Absolutely. The legal system is a great way to do it. If you can get him mandated into care, the better. Although
that's just service I should start.
Although in California now, it's Prop 47, you can barely force the issue because people just are not arrested.
I know. I want to be like a guy who professionally sets people up.
Yeah, just pack the car with heroin.
Yeah,
and then after the cops arrest him, take the same batch of heroin, put him in somebody else's car.
Yeah, that might end like firearms and shit, and just like plant it on people. But all, I mean, not for good reasons.
Yeah.
You know, like the guy's gone bonkers. He's doing smack all day, and the family has no ability to get control of his life. That, you know, you need to help my son. We can't. We've tried everything. He's been to rehab 12 times, and then I go and I get him set up. He gets 2 years in county. It's the only way.
Oh, jeez.
That's sick.
Come on.
I'm just reading an email here.
Okay. That's good radio.
What do we do with the pot situation now?
In what sense?
I don't know. I don't know quite what to do. I mean, we're getting people switching from opiates to pot, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think they think that now I'm good.
Right.
And
well, all we need to do is just get the most ardent marijuana evangelists, which there's these zealots out there.
Yeah.
Because neither you or I is anti-weed by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
It's a fantastic drug for what it does.
And more to be revealed,
but
too.
It is a drug.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't like about the extreme pot, you know, kind of voices out there is that no one's saying pot. I think it should be legalized. I think it should be legalized nationally. And I think that if you want to smoke weed all you want. But let's quit creating this narrative that pot is utterly harmless. It is not. It's a drug that chemically does shit to your
body. But alcohol hurts people. Well, look at alcohol.
Alcohol is fucking poison.
That's
yeah,
right.
No shit.
That's right.
But the end. Let's all consider that all drugs are drugs and they can affect drug addicts the same way. You can be fucked up on them, and you can throw your life away on them. Now, The shovel to which you dig a hole for yourself with weed is much smaller than all other drugs,
mm-hmm.
including alcohol.
Yeah.
You could throw
it's the, different. It's
you
different.
Dig yourself a giant hole with drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
What about over time, though?
Well, that's the
well,
hole.
It just kind of just deflates you. You know, yeah. like pot addicts, like drug addicts, that pot is their drug of choice. You know, they're not selling their fucking, they're not pawning their watch so that they can get their next hit. But they're just kind of empty. They're just kind of like
well,
empty
sort of,
people.
They sort of,
you know,
they have trouble initiating activities.
Yeah,
and right. so it's kind of a blunting and a settling that they're. Then they also lose insight, so they're not aware it's happening.
Right, and don't get all if you're listening and you're getting all pissy because you're like my uncle runs four businesses. Yeah. He smokes weed
sure.
all day. He's not a drug addict.
He's not.
He just
talking
smokes
about
a lot of weed.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between someone.
Yes, there are people that drink a lot of alcohol that are not alcoholics.
Right. Yeah. Right, yep. right. And there's people who take bong rips for breakfast. They're not drug addicts, but they just love to smoke a lot of weed. And I'm sure a lot of those people are very high-functioning and very ambitious and do a lot of great shit.
That's fairly unusual. It does have some effect on your brain, most people, the vast majority, let's put it that way. I mean, even Joe Rogan and Kreischer, when they stopped, remember? Did you?
Yeah, yeah. I remember Joe saying like there was he felt a lot better and certain
he slept
regard,
better.
But I just remember him saying like I've had dreams. I've had the first yeah. dreams I've had in 15 years
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
I only have shitty dreams.
I only dream about you. It's weird.
Oh.
Ooh. You had a sex dream.
About I did?
Yeah, recently you told me about.
Okay.
I just think it's important to if I was going
oh yeah, I did.
I was in that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sort of.
You were watching.
You're watching Drew just dork up Adam from the backside.
Yeah.
Just spit on his massive dong.
Okay.
As long as we can push that idea across where that marijuana is a drug and that it can be harmful,
yeah.
that it's with weed, that's the only drug where it's like black and white. You're either this reefer madness maniac who's trying to create this idea that, you know, well, number one gateway drug is going to destroy your life.
No, no, no,
or
no.
You're this person like completely healthy, cures cancer, nothing wrong with weed. It's like, no, it's a fucking drug. It's a rather innocuous drug in comparison to most, but it's a drug and it does shit chemically to your brain and that always needs to be regulated and monitored.
Is there any Facebook questions?
Well, we had a nice comment about the Dopey podcast. Jeremy said, just wanted to say the last This Life podcast with Dopey podcast was amazing.
We talked to Dave from Dopey. Yeah. It was very
I think I was here that day. I came in at the end and sat down right here on this couch.
No, we did another one.
Did you?
This week. It actually posted yesterday this week, but he was really nice to call in. And
yeah, but Dave's really struggling with this.
It's only been 2 weeks since Chris passed away.
So you did another podcast with just Dave after? Okay.
And Bob. And it was touching.
Where's Theo? What the hell's going on?
Make no mistake. Make no mistake. You're going to die.
He's close.
If you're using and you think you have it under control and you're a daily user of opiates,
it's going to kill you.
You're going to die.
Yes.
And you're,
it's a matter of time.
Your timeline is unpredictable, but make no mistake, it's way shorter than a normal person.
Yeah,
it's nice that we can say that now and have people sort of hear it. I was saying it 10 years ago, and people were like, "Yeah, right. My doctor just say I need this."
Yeah,
And then Jeff Conway and Mike Starr, but gone.
Yeah,
that's it. Gone.
And everybody wants you to interview Rex, or actually Carol Ream does. So
interview Rex the dog.
Yeah. So when you hear Rex bark, you'll know Theo's here because he's.
Oh, mate, it's me, Rex the dog, eh? He's an Australian Shepherd.
He likes you, Mike.
I'm a big animal guy.
He's very mellow.
Do you have other internet questions? Emails?
Internet? Yeah. No, nobody's asking questions. There's only, you know, there's not that many people on there. So,
You interview Sean Spicer on KBC?
I did not interview Sean Spicer. I interviewed Scaramucci.
Because we had the chance to sit down with Spicer on Access.
Well, that's what I want to ask you. Okay, and? I met him over at Sirius.
It was nuts.
Yeah. Scaramucci I had breakfast with.
The Mooch?
Yeah. Nice guy. Very nice guy.
In a totally opposite way than Sean Spicer.
Sean Spicer seemed like a nice guy, too.
Sean Spicer, I know, but very nice guy.
Different guy. Yeah,
but a totally different type of nice.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Scaramucci
seems a little greasy nice.
He's more entertaining nice.
Right.
Yeah.
John Spicer seems like my dad's, like, nice golf buddy. And then he's fucking press secretary, just fielding bombs getting thrown at him. I was like, that's really was your problem. You're just too nice a guy for that job.
I want to switch back to Access Hollywood because you and I were talking about Demi Lovato with Natalie.
Yeah, Natalie.
And she had trouble getting her head around it.
I think all people who aren't drug addicts or, you know, married to one or have like a drug addict kid, I totally understand why it seems crazy. Drug addiction seems fucking nuts.
And then you showed her horrible pictures.
I did?
You texted me that you did. And that didn't go well.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
But Kit likes them.
Oh, my God.
She does.
And Natalie, I just managed her just like really like, Mike, do not do that.
Yeah. I think I'm tapping into Natalie's fun side a lot more. I think it's really there.
You're going to turn her into a 14-year-old also?
No, that's not happening. I mean, I think she's like an Ivy League chick. I don't think that that's going to happen.
They still laugh at your jokes, though. They do, Drew. I watch them. They laugh
on,
at
on the
jokes.
Air, you mean?
Yeah.
They're
yeah,
pros. Sure. They're trained to laugh even if it's not funny.
But do you feel as though you're able to get through to them on this on how addiction works and stuff? They seem to defer to you, which is nice.
Yes and no.
I mean, when we did that interview on Demi, I think that was the first time they had heard sort of pieces of your story, and Natalie was like, "What?"
Yeah,
she was like, "Huh?"
Well, yeah, because I mean, I'd never want to be that guy that goes around as an exhibitionist.
No, I understand, but she was
like, "She's like, you just kind of because of all the years of Loveline and stuff. Like, you're just like, Mike, so tell them about all the times you overdosed." And she's like, "What? What?
She literally was like, it's like your head spun around.
Well, and also she only sees me in my most polished capacity.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. Right. So, that's why you showed her horrible pictures.
So here's a question.
I don't listen, by the way, I'm not showing her pictures like I show you.
Okay, no.
Let's not let's be goodness. Clear.
I don't think she should even know.
How
about
the Magritte reference in the last one? That's pretty good.
Yeah,
was
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Okay.
So your top fan, Edgar, says, what's Drew's opinion on the difference between an addict versus someone that's dependent on drugs?
That's a good question.
It is a great question because, and it's to some extent, that's some of what we were talking about with pot, right?
Yeah.
Because somebody can use a lot of kind of even be dependent upon it, but not be an addict per se.
I'm dependent on caffeine. I'll have withdrawal. I can't feel like I can't function without it.
It's a little different, but I would argue that the real story that Edgar's referring to is the opiate dependent non addict.
Yeah,
a lot of those these days.
Yeah.
Never used to see that. We used to call it pseudo addiction back in the day, and so now people are getting strung out so much on opioids for pain, and don't realize that it's perpetuating the pain, and they're getting strung out, that they look for all purposes to be an addict. And yet when you take them off, you just get them detox, and if you get them completely off everything, it's over.
Yeah, it's over.
They wake up like 5 days later and go, what the hell? I'm not interested in that. Why didn't somebody tell me that I was stuck in this thing? And I've seen a lot of that. And those people can die of opiate addiction too. Because you start going with the opiates, start going with the back pain, start going with the leg pain. You start not sleeping. You start going for sleeping meds and the back pain and the anxiety now kicks in because you're in withdrawal and you're escalating your sleeping meds and your pain meds, and that's it. That person can die easily, and does, which is really sad. It's not even a dying addiction.
Do you see a lot of opiate addicts going in for like Viagra and stuff too? Cialis?
Testosterone. They actually get testosterone shots because opiates turn off the testosterone.
Listless. Yeah.
No, your testosterone goes to the toilet. It's a dopamine blocker. And so they will get these prolactin levels that go up, testosterone levels go down. Oh, yeah. And I've seen doctors not understanding that it's the opiates start going, oh, you have some sort of testicular failure. We've got to replace this.
It's a weird thing because, like, all the heroin addicts I knew, and my only real point of reference is, like people slamming heroin. It's a different crazy than someone who pops pills.
Yeah.
It's a different crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a culture.
Like,
it's
heroin addicts,
culturally different.
Heroin addicts turn into, like, empty shells that drool on themselves.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's why when they said to Demi Lovato heroin, I went, no. No,
Theo
not heroin. Theo, sit down here, buddy.
What's
sit
up,
down.
Theo?
Grab a mic. Okay, we'll go to break while Theo Von sets up here. We'll take a little break. Be right back. Well, it's about time for athletes, trainers to report for the start of the fall season, but we are still dealing with that extreme heat. So even if you're training indoors, dehydration is a major issue for amateurs and pros. Water sports drinks, they do not do a great job. I've known this for a long time. That's why I wanted to develop a product. Instead, Hydrolyte came along, so I strongly suggest you stay ahead of your hydration with Hydrolyte. The best way to stay hydrated is with a proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and Hydrolyte does this better than anything else I've tried. Everyone here swears by it. My wife, my kids, my patients. I use it if patients need rehydration. It's a way to replete hydration orally. This gets you ahead of the game, and so you can sometimes avoid hospitalization things, in my experience. Hydralyte comes in great flavors like orange, berry, and lemonade. Available as a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or my personal preference is these effervescence tablets. You simply drop in a glass of water or a bottle of water. Literally, we don't leave home without these. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugars. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow instructions. This is the best hydration product out there, period, end. You can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or at Hydralyte.com/Dr. Drew, D-R-D-R-E-W. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydralyte. I just sent my daughter over to buy this stuff. She's like, I need Hydralyte. I'm like, go to the website and use the code DrDrew18, D-R-D-R-E-W-18 at checkout. That is Hydralyte.com, Hydralyte.com/DrDrew18. Use that code, get 30% off. You won't need any other hydration products. It's the best. And we're back with Theo Von in here. Let's talk a little bit about your podcast. It's growing fast, twice a week. What days are it up?
This past weekend, it's on Mondays and Thursdays.
Let the dog be. He has sexual addiction problems. It's all right. He likes this.
This is true. I don't know where this falls in my. This might be in my inner circle.
I find it strange that you do, because from the little that I know of your using. Just from like listening to you and your comedy and stuff, you seem like such an isolated addict.
Wait a second. Drug addicts don't isolate?
No. Drug addict, dual diagnosis, sex addicts. Typically, you know, like my friends that are in recovery that are sex addicts.
Yeah,
they're always party animals.
I see. It doesn't have to be like that. No.
And I relate because I was to me, heaven. Was a crack pipe in a room by myself, cable television. I was not the, like, let's
imagine
go out
if
to
there
the...
was porn back then, though, on the internet, dude.
You wouldn't be here.
I just wore out DVDs and VHSs.
Yeah, but with the internet, with the
it'd
endless...
It'd be too much.
You would love...
No, you know what would be worse is, like, if there was Tinder.
Yeah.
There was Tinder back then. It was just...
Dude, when I was growing up, I mean, you had... You know, we used to. They had this dude named Nick that would draw you a little picture of crotch for the weekend. You'd give him $4, and he'd sketch you out a little... picture of some vagina for the weekend, you know, and then you get it on Friday and utilize it over the weekend.
See, I think a lot of human artistic impulse is built on that. I'm not kidding.
Dude,
when they say, "Oh, it's a fertility god. It's a fertility goddess. It's a symbol."
Yeah,
I just immediately think, "Oh, men. Yeah. You know what they're doing to that?
Yeah, they're beating off."
Yeah,
yeah.
I was thinking, like, do you think that everything in the world at some point in human history has been fucked?
Well. Not some small birds, I bet.
But most trees, like every tree that's been around for thousands of years, like all like caves, and like you know what I'm saying. Like at some point, a dude walked by and he's like, "Huh?
Maybe."
It's terrible. So, talk more about your podcast. Has mine been up yet?
This past weekend, no. And here's why.
Yeah,
because we have a group who's doing counseling that is going to be advertising with us, and we think it's going to be best utilized.
Great.
Then.
Makes perfect sense.
They're doing online counseling a lot now. What do you think about that?
You know, I'm not sure what to do with it. We need something like that, and we need it to work, right?
Yeah.
A friend of mine, that dog's breathing is bothering me. All we hear is...
Push him off the couch. Okay. I don't know
Rex, that's it.
It's like doing a podcast with Tommy Lasorda.
I know.
Or Tom Arnold.
Only lately.
Oh, that's funny.
He's been very excitable lately. The Trump syndrome. He's like
I know. He's caught. Yeah. Trump got him, bro. Trump's getting everybody.
And what was I talking about?
Oh, we're talking about the online.
The online stuff. So I've got a friend. I did a talk for something called the Obsessive Compulsive Disorder, International Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Federation, IOCDF. Mm-hmm. IOCDF.org. If you go on there, a woman named Elizabeth McGill, who is a therapist now, she herself had this condition, has set up an online series of exposure therapies that really seem to work. So there's one, boom, OCD. There's these things you can, these procedures you can go through. You know cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah, I love it.
That's a procedure you could kind of do with a computer probably, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I've used software that kind of correlates to a book that I read by the guy who, Beck, what was his name, that invented kind of?
Steinbeck? Yeah.
No, Dr. Beck.
Dr. Beck.
Yeah, feeling better or something.
Anyway, there's
software that it can actually online software.
Yeah, and so these aren't perfect, but they're for people that don't have access and people because I fundamentally believe that to really heal you need another human. I think we talk a little bit about that at the podcast. And so I'm always skeptical when they say, "Well, it's an online program; you can get better." All right, you can get better to a point, but ultimately, even when you're doing those kinds of procedures, those kinds of interventions, you're doing it with a person. A person's taking you through it, and it's kind of a co-created thing,
right?
I think that's much more powerful than doing anything by yourself. Now, can you do that across a screen, right? Is the screen adequate to do that? Plenty of people have done therapy with screens with therapists that they're already established with, right? I noticed once a woman who runs the Center for Healthy Sex here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, Rhonda?
Alexandra Katahakis.
Okay.
I was watching
has the sexiest voice in the world.
Because she used to do our show. Yeah, yeah. And she...
she's high.
Is she?
I'm here to talk to you about sex addiction.
Right. But she was, we were sharing a podium of one time, and I went to the back to the audience, and I watched a video that she played of her doing some sex therapy. And I realized that her attunement was so good that I was breathing with her.
Wow.
Like my breathing, I could tell, was like, it was exactly with her. I thought, oh man, that's a good therapist. But interesting how it came across the screen and I responded to it. Now, I'm somebody who's been in a ton of therapy.
Right.
So I'm prone to it. It's almost like somebody who's been hypnotized a million times. Mm-hmm. You can go into hypnosis if you want to. So the bottom line of what I'm saying is it's probably has to be some combination of in person. And across the screen can probably be useful too.
Think about like 12-step, like how it wouldn't work.
If it weren't in person, same thing I thought.
You know, doing it via computer, Skype or something. It just wouldn't work.
How come?
Because you need to be in those rooms and experience the camaraderie and stuff. Like
what if you had a group? This was interestingly where my head went. Why not? Couldn't you have a little community of – Zoom will put you 35 faces on a screen now.
You know why?
Because you'll bullshit it?
Because I could sit there and scroll through my phone and
you're not fully present.
Watch TV out of the corner of my eye. Potentially be shit faced. There's something about walking. I feel a sense of pride going in there another day sober, walking into that room and joining that.
What if you're
right?
Joining
I agree.
I agree.
Checking in. Excuse me, Drew. I was thinking, but what I start to wonder, and I think this maybe even applies to both of these things, is does this other generation, does a younger generation, do they not know? They cannot differentiate. Like we're in this world where we can kind of we're caught between two worlds in some ways. But can they not differentiate between online affection and real affection?
It's a great
I wonder
point.
If it feels the same to them
because
then
question.
It would all be equal.
It's a great question, and we're having horrible times getting them to engage in 12-step. They just will not do it.
Yeah. Really,
really bad.
Well, I think
and
there's
I've
a
wondered,
social
I've
awkwardness.
No, but I'm wondering if a screen would help get them engaged.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Dude,
we don't know.
They won't go to a record store for that reason.
Yeah.
You know, my point being that if you can do it from home, they're going to. Dude, most kids I know don't even want to get their license.
Yeah.
They don't want to drive.
One kid I know hasn't even come out of his mother yet. He's 13 years old.
He's still in the womb.
Yeah. And it's unbelievable,
He's
dude.
Got Wi-Fi down there.
He has 6.9 million followers on Instagram, too. Yeah. It's mostly upskirt pics, but still. Hey, that was pretty good, wasn't it?
You better use that tonight. You better
it's amazing.
That wasn't too bad. But, I really wonder that. Like, because I heard someone said that, like, if somebody for a younger generation, a like on a social media or some form of acceptance like that feels the same as when we were younger and somebody let us know that we were okay.
Or they liked
what
us.
If that didn't
they
happen?
Literally like you. What if it never happened?
Yeah, when you were younger.
No one ever liked you?
They never said it.
You never heard it.
Yeah, they said it, but you didn't hear it.
Yeah.
No, I'd never like my male friends would never be like you're you know what you're a good fella,
right? But like, they might do this though.
Hey, you played football. I'm sure you got
some guy touched.
I got
your
no.
Ass.
People told me good play.
Okay,
but never. Yeah, I never got. You're a nice guy. You're a good person.
Some guy smelled your helmet after the game. I'm sure.
What?
I like you.
Yeah, you never got that.
Oh, dude,
from
you're
Chicks?
Freaking handsome. You look like that guy from Chips.
I do have an Estrada.
Eric Estrada.
Dude, you're probably pulling chicks all over all day on the highway.
I was
bro,
fucking
you could pull
a lot.
Over any 55-year-old woman in Los Angeles, dude.
No. As an adult, I get it. Yeah, I certainly did. But I'm saying as a kid,
right.
It wasn't. And I think that, look.
You were fairly belligerent, though.
I listened to Corolla talk about his upbringing and his male friends.
Yeah.
And,
you were lucky if you didn't get shit thrown at you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was kind of the world.
Yeah, but I'd throw shit at Adam if I knew him.
Yeah.
You know, better.
He's a good shit receiver.
Oh, as a kid, dude?
You'd be Ray to his Adam?
I bet it was fun to make fun of Adam probably when he was a kid.
Oh, he certainly took his share of it, man.
Because I bet he dished it out. Did he say
Not? Yes. Yeah. You know Adam just ruined people.
Yeah.
You know he did.
But he said, you don't know, there's a famous story where Chris and Ray were his nemesis friends. And they came out of the boys' bathroom with kind of walking out. You know, hey, Adam, come here. And they had one hand behind him. Uh-huh. And Adam's like, well, this can't be good. This is good. And they're like, come on, get over here. And they were a lot bigger and stronger than him at that point. And they grabbed him and threw their stool that they had just released into this paper towel into his head and packed in his ear. And then he started chasing them, and they were running it down the halls of the school screaming, Adam's a shithead.
Wow.
That's so gross.
That's drastic.
What boys do. Come on, relax.
I don't know.
No one ever did
that
to you, Susan? Come on.
Speaking of that, though, Theo, how do you feel about yourself? And I don't mean this I expect you to be braggadocious, but how does it make you feel about yourself at an adult age to get into recovery? Is there a renewed
And before you
sense?
Say that, what time do you have to make your show?
I think I have 20 minutes.
What time do you have to be there?
I need to be there about 5 minutes after 8 p.m.
After it. You got to leave your court. Yeah, you have about 15 minutes.
True.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let him finish
there. Is it 10 minutes away?
It's 15.
Well, good. I'm watching the clock. Don't worry.
I don't want you to be late to his own show.
Yeah, that won't suck.
I'm showcasing for Showtime tonight. They come out to watch.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Nice, man.
Can we? I'm coming over.
Congratulations.
I want to bring my son and his girlfriend. Can we come?
You definitely could.
I was saying
she bought tickets.
You did?
Yeah.
You're good. So they sold out. So
really?
I'm glad you did. Yeah.
Can you sneak us in?
I know the guys there.
There you go.
I was saying to Drew and Susan before you got here, and I'm not even trying to blow smoke. I said you're the funniest guy working right now.
Oh, thanks, man.
Without question.
I appreciate that.
No one makes me laugh like you do.
Thanks, dude. Wow, that's like the handsomest guy that's ever told me something nice.
Eric Estrada.
What about Shab?
Nice
huh? I mean, come on,
Shab. Shab's like, he's a lot of lotion and surprises. You know? I think you really got it at your
Thanks,
core.
Buddy.
You got some handsomeness, dude. You Native American or something?
Mexican.
I could see that, dude.
A nice little twist of Mexican.
It's kind of the same thing. They're still kind of Native Americans down there.
I love when hosts are hosting each other.
So ask him the question about the they weren't
hosting.
How does it
feel to be in recovery as an adult?
As an adult, what did you get a renewed sense of kind of self-respect?
You know what I got? I feel like just a total late bloomer. I feel like I am literally have just been growing up in the past 2 years. And like before that, I don't even know, literally don't know what I was doing on an emotional level. Thank you.
Yeah.
Like I literally don't know. Like I think I had to manifest a lot of my emotions with thought.
Something about your upbringing was, I hope you talk more about it because it's fascinating to me. It was there was something deprived about it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why you substituted other things. I don't have a clear picture of it yet because I'm not sure if you have a clear feeling about it.
I think the more I thought about it, man, I was at the CHS, the Center for Health, Sex, or what is it, CSH, whatever it is.
Center for Healthy Sex?
Yeah, I was there yesterday. And
Did
I had
you see Alexandra?
This lady named Rhonda Bernstein.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she was great. She had a slip and fall. She hurt her head, but she's going to be okay. It's just a bruise. But anyhow, I had one of the best sessions I'd ever had in there, man. And it was a lot about, I think, like when I was young, I wanted my mom and I've never laughed together like my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, my mom has always been a hard worker. She continues to work. She works all the time. And I just, all I ever wanted to do, I think, was kind of make her laugh. I just wanted to have some, I wanted us to see, to have some time. And there's never really been any time. And she won't stop working. And I think she'll work all the way. And I feel like we'll probably never have time. And I never realized that until like yesterday we were talking about it. And it just like – I was so overcome with emotion, bro, that I fucking couldn't – I felt like a poltergeist was going to come out of like this part of
my – It's called globus hystericus, when like a fist is coming up into your throat.
Dude,
right?
It was bizarre, bro. Yeah, yeah. I felt like fucking Harry Potter hit me with some Hufflepuff, you know? Just caught me right in the throat. Some fucking, you know, some larynx, jajarynx.
But that's crazy when emotional things kind of take over your body. Visceral feeling.
Yes.
But that's what emotions are. They're in our body. It's crazy. Naturally, it should be a body-based response.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's fascinating.
But in there is that deprivation, right? The absence.
Yeah, I think also I was probably a really frazzled. Like, I wanted it so bad.
Every child does.
Yeah.
Every kid does. And then you just don't get it, and then you're compensating the rest of the day.
Yeah. And then my dad was so old that I think if I went to him, he was dying. So it was like this weird, like, here's.
You almost felt guilty.
Couldn't make him laugh.
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, I literally don't even know. I mean, that's as far as I've gotten, really. But I think getting into recovery helped me realize that the world wasn't against me. Mm-hmm. I was always so defensive, and it was so taxing and tiring. It's so tiring, like, hating the world. It is just...
I have this image for you. Tell me why I have this. Of, like, trailers and swamp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that the hood? Is that what?
No, it was more like just whites, like not a lot of shirts, like a lot of whites, like a lot
what
of.
Was it, were the houses?
Like Gummo?
Like yeah, more like Gummo.
Okay.
What's Gummo?
Yeah, Gummo is like
it's
more.
A flick.
It's like, did you see the one, the documentary about the Making a Murderer, that thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's more like that kind of vibe, you know? Like a 14-year-old kid and a 35-year-old man like burning furniture outside.
With a lot no of dirt shirts. Bikes, no shirts.
Yeah, yeah, some dirt bikes, you know. The guy across the street murdered his grandmother, who was my favorite cafeteria worker.
And there were different groups. Like, there was racial groups, right?
Yeah, there was some. It was mostly just poor black and poor white, kind of.
Was there mixing or just?
Yeah, there was some mixing because we all rode together on the school bus. Mm. And there was some racism, I think, both ways. But it was just, it's when you're so poor, you'll hate. Or when there is poverty, you'll hate. Hate is like the only thing you have sometimes, I guess. Mm. It gives you something to do. It's like, oh, we'll be angry at them. I mean, you don't have any education. You're not. Oh, we'll be angry at them because of this, you know.
Are people that you've left behind angry at you?
I don't think so. No. I think there's more pride than anything. Mm. Some, I thought for a long time they were.
Yeah.
And that was my own thing in this head, in my
Well,
head.
But you would worry about envy kind of coming up. Because envy does. That a lot of that is envy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe there's some envy, you know. But, I mean, I want to help other kids, like, from those types of places that feel – just don't feel good about themselves.
Well, now, when you first – I think I first met you on Corolla. And, yeah. And you were much like him in terms of helping people build themselves out of there.
Yeah.
Don't give them stuff. Help them figure out how to fish.
Yeah.
Don't give them fish.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and I still – his motto is, like, you know, what – spend a – don't pick up a penny, spend a dollar, whatever that thing he always says. He's got some good mottos, that guy.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
It's like,
oh, don't let a dime hold up a dollar?
Yes.
Okay.
And I use that a lot, in, you know, in thinking about, well, quit thinking about this and just think about the bigger picture.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Help things. But one of my ultimate goals is through my podcast, I'd love to have like a actual brick and mortar place where people can go to get help that's funded somehow by the podcast eventually, you know. And not that like I do any of the helping or anything like
no,
that.
No, you'd fund it.
But yeah. But yeah, I think that would make me
feel
good.
We need to figure out some way.
I talked to the Bloods and Crips. I did that.
Did you really?
The, online journalism site called Control Forever. They sent me, and I talked to the modern Bloods and Crips. That kind of see because it,
you went to their place.
I went to Compton. And I went to South Central, and it was fucking intense.
Fuck, dude! If you came in my neighborhood, yeah.
What
the
you
craziest
talk about?
Part was 100% of them, man, woman, young and old. I asked them, I said, if you had the ability to talk to someone about your mental health and your needs, would you? And they said, I would love that.
Oh. Wow.
And that blew me away.
Huh.
55-year-old OGs or young kids, 17-year-old kids. And they're like, I just feel like my life's so stressful and no one's ever thought to like talk to me about
that
it.
That seems like opportunity to me.
Wow.
It was so.
Were you talking about recovery?
No. Drugs was certainly an issue. I mean, certainly an issue.
Yeah.
But less than you might expect. Less than you might. But
here's something. Here's something I want.
It was more that like they had almost PTSD.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That no one wanted to even address it.
Yeah, well, that they know? Do have PTSD a lot. Yeah. So I believe that some sort of community building, because you have to find a way to scale this. Right, to really help, because we got massive problems in this country.
Okay, so what do you mean by scale it?
Like this be able to have access for lots of people.
Right.
And right now, like when you look at the opiate crisis, they go, well, we have to use Suboxone. It's the only scalable solution. It's like, oh, Jesus. I by the way, I beg to differ, because 12-step is a scalable solution, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't account for people who are just not going to do the work.
That's fine. That's replacement. That's fine. But in terms of community building and virtue building and building people to live a certain kind of life, that's communities like 12-step. And we need – maybe you could invent something. something, maybe, or maybe your little community that you're thinking of imagining putting together could be then reproduced in other places.
Mm, I love that idea. Thinking of like a bigger, yeah, like a Chick-fil-A type of style.
But it has to it has to be cheap or free. It has to be less expensive than Chick-fil-A. It has to be just literally like 12-step. You just go because it's mutual aid.
Yeah.
People helping people, building community. That I think is a major, major thing today because people don't want church. They don't want family. They don't want community. We got to build a mental health
community. Sense of community is important.
I know.
And people don't get it. You're right.
I know.
But sense of community is going to gain ground, I think. Do you think it's going to?
I know 12-step kind of is right now, so I'm hopeful. I'm fine with church being a piece of this, too. I think the clergy could play a major role for some people. But we have to do something like that. Something's got to bring us together to help one another. Hey, you just went out and helped a bunch of Crips and Bloods.
Yeah,
you're not a trained professional.
I wasn't helping them. Yeah, I was just talking to them.
That's helping.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it inadvertently did, but it was self-serving. I was trying to get a media piece. I was trying to make media out of it.
Oh well, you know? Oh well, they benefit too.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like that's fine, and they knew what they were signing up for.
Sure.
And maybe again, we'll educate other people about
the reason I want to point out that I wasn't helping is like I didn't go out there for philanthropic.
I understand.
I want to make it.
I understand. You know? I get it. I get that there was the other motivators.
That's honorable you to say that, though.
My point is, who cares?
Yeah.
If it got them in the room and they're motivated and they're talking, who cares?
That's a good point.
Roll the cameras. Fine.
Well, I think there is even value in the idea of hearing them say that. These guys are like, I spent 16 years in prison.
Maybe there's something
murder.
In that roll the cameras. Maybe motivate people to come in and big videos or something create something. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But
one kid told me, he's like, I just wish that I could talk to someone who would listen because the streets don't care. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, fuck. He's like, the streets don't have any conscience.
I could see that, yeah. Yeah, those people, nobody's talking about feelings out there. Right. That's why, you know. And most of these people probably don't really realize that they have feelings, you know.
Right, they're a million miles away from that, and that's the PTSD or the shutdown or to manage.
Do you feel like, I mean, I noticed one of the biggest things is just so many young men, even that reach out to our podcast, my podcast or our podcast, they just feel errant. Kind of. They feel like there hasn't been like a discipline in their life or something.
Absolutely. What are the middle children of history? From my age down to like, you know, guys that are teenagers now, the Great Depression, no like World War, you know, like even military endeavors seem like it's detached from the everyman.
There's nothing that makes us feel like a man.
And the idea of blue collar work has been so demonized. You know, everyone is getting college debt for still a lot of people for no reason. There's so much honor in going out and learning to be an electrician or a contractor and stuff. And that has been so demonized
as has just being male
by culture. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that like we feel they're wayward and errant. And I think Theo's exactly right. There's this aimlessness. And of course, you've never been more free to do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah,
but without this point, it's almost like floating in space. It seems liberating at first, but after a while, you're just kind of floating around. Like, where do I go? You know, my dad in 1960. You know, he's 18. 1963. He really had three choices.
What was
go
it?
Get a manual labor job,
mm-hmm.
or learn a trade, join the military,
mm-hmm.
go to college.
Yeah,
and I don't and there it wasn't like I'm going to start an internet startup. Oh, my friend and I are going to travel, and like I said, that liberty, that freedom, and the choice is great, but it also makes things so much more overwhelming and seeming like you're just awash in nothingness. You know,
I agree,
and it's concerning because I wonder what the solution would be.
Part of the problem is we've sold this bill of goods that happiness is the goal, right? And hedonic happiness or euphoria is a empty bag.
Right.
Right? You just go from euphoria to desire, back to euphoria to desire. And so it's not a fulfilling thing. And so it turns out there's something called eudaimonic happiness, which is more meaning-making. I think I talked to you a little bit about this.
Mm.
It's meaning-making. You got to live a certain kind of life. You got to be of service. You have to create meaning.
But that I think a lot of people get confused that means – like you've got to be Mother Teresa.
It does not mean Mother Teresa, but it does mean, and this is the part people miss, you have to have a certain amount of skill and a certain amount of knowledge.
Yeah, in order to be stepmother Diane, at least.
In order to really have something to offer. Otherwise, that's going to feel kind of empty, too. It's not going to feel substantial.
But
enough.
Wouldn't eudaimonic?
Eudaimonic
happiness come from, like, being a good dad?
Yes.
Or being, yes. You know what I'm saying? Or,
yes, it could be that.
Being a Little League coach. Or, yes, you know,
absolutely.
I just wanted to make the point that you don't have to do – it's being of service, but it doesn't have to be grandiose.
The grandiose service doesn't serve that function. Yeah. It tends to be one-on-one.
Yeah, and I think for me, I have this feeling that greed is going to go out of style.
I think it really already has. I just read a statistic that like 68% of millennials say that they're not interested in a job that pays them well.
They're more interested in doing things than having things.
Right. And it's
way different than like the mid-80s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And also having things is not even becoming – it's almost coming – it's blurred because like now, you know, you have Uber. So that everything – it's more of a service. Things are more of a service. So it's like, oh, you don't have that. You just have it when you need it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be silly to have a car sitting outside of your house all day. Dude, somebody could be using that car to drive around and get other people where they need to go. Like, it's kind of weird, bro. You know?
Why would you have that car sitting
there? Yeah, why would you just have that, dude? It can't even do anything.
And there's so much in this, in the phone. There's just so much that – I mean, they're gratified all the time by this in all kinds of ways.
I think Thea should go.
You do?
I just don't want you – well, I don't want you to, but I don't want you to.
Time.
What time is it?
7:45.
I got 5 more minutes.
Okay.
What time's the show?
I got 3 more minutes. Eight?
No, dude.
It's Lake Avenue exit.
I understand. I go there all the
time. We all know where the ice house is. I need to go.
But we're going to go. What time have you hit the stage?
I'll hit the stage at probably 8:40.
Okay.
Okay. So somebody had a question for Theo.
Okay.
He said, Eric said, what's the difference between doing stand-up comedy now that you're clean from when you were using?
Great question.
Man, I remember sometime I'd get on stage and be on a little bit of cocaine, you know, and that would be the hardest because I couldn't hear exactly. Like, I could hear, but everything seemed like it was like a quarter of a second off or something. So I couldn't tell when to restart my next moment and man, it made me so scared. I just think I'm more – I honestly think I'm a little bit kinder these days than I used to be. And I don't know really, because I think I'm a little bit kinder to myself. And so I just, it then infects the way that I behave towards others, I think. And so then I can be kinder on stage. I can come from a more jovial place. And I know now when I get up there and my goal is to make people feel good, then it's a total different ballgame than it is to like hammer these people over the head with jokes or like. Now I feel almost like of service more. Like I feel a little bit more of like a conduit now. Like I have an ability to make people feel something.
And to be fair, I always thought that what a great comedian pulls a community together.
Yeah.
Talking about the community. It's the audience is having this collective experience. You know who did that like crazy was Ralphie May.
Yeah.
Ralphie May would just make the audience like an organic thing that he like would play with. It was crazy.
Yeah, he was that man was so lovable, huh?
Yeah.
Very sad. Very sad. I like that guy a lot. We miss him.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
There's a big push, and I think that may be one of the only upsides to this whole political correctness. I'm starting to see a lot more of a shift to kinder comedy. And it doesn't mean it's any less funny, but like the days of just everything's like fuck the world, this neurotic anger. And
yeah, that kind of stuff is disappearing.
It's kind of going away.
Some of that Marc Maron vibe is kind of like, it's not cool. It's like you have everything you want, but you're just complaining all the time. It's not helping anything, kind of. It's not believable, really. Or it's not fair. I don't know what it is. Maybe I also don't even know what I'm talking about.
I think it's a personal thing, too. But, that movement was so huge in the 90s, early 2000s. Like, everything was just about, like, fuck the world. And
the grunge.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Like Kurt Cobain kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, again, we had several decades that were not good. I'm telling you.
They were not good. Yeah, but all the decades that you hate seem to make a lot of good art.
Well.
I wonder if humanity's panning out. That's kind of my big thing.
If we're paying out the way we should.
I don't know if it's panning out.
Like what sense?
Human. Being human.
Like we shouldn't.
We
like,
should cash in our chips
like
and
the,
call
the
it a day.
The experiment's no good.
Yeah, like the experiment's no good. You know what I'm saying? Like at what point is it like, maybe this. You know what I'm saying?
There's a lot of like positives and negatives. You know,
it'd yeah,
be
that's
hard.
True.
It'd be really hard.
I'm an advocate for human beings, just for the record.
Oh, you're wow. pro-human?
I'm pro-human.
Oh, I know. You knew he would be.
Last quick question. Why on earth did you get obsessed with buying vests?
Oh, man, I got into this vest kind of collection thing. You know, I think it was just my way of being like Prince or something. And it was like cheaper, it was affordable way to be Prince at your house.
That's good.
You would get coked out and buy vests.
I would just do some cocaine at night by myself and wear a bunch of vests and try on these different vests and stuff. Dude, on a fucking crazy month, I'd have 11 vests that weren't boxed. That weren't unboxed, all closed up. Get a little a couple grams of blow, dude, and just unbox those things, bro, and put them on all night.
Yeah. That is a dream come true, man.
Wow.
That's what I thought, and I made it happen.
That's glamorous drug use.
That's what I thought, and I made it happen, man. You know. You never know what's possible, dude, with a little bit of cocaine.
Best true. Man.
You never know what's possible.
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll see. We're going to go. We'll see you there.
Okay.
Have a good show.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Do we need to wrap this thing up, or can we go for a little while? We have to wrap it up? Or will you get anything more going on Facebook before we go?
No. Everybody's enjoying your conversation. It's a slow night. It's kind of, you know.
All right.
It's a Wednesday.
Well, thank you, Facebook. Yeah. Thank you, Theo.
Yeah, I want to come back, man. I'm sorry that I was late.
Don't ridiculous. It's all good.
You can come back anytime.
And what's coming up on your pod?
We got a guy named Jocko Willink coming on.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Former Navy SEAL.
He's like an intense man that's watched people die. Like, I've seen a lot of people's life just leave their eyes. And then and we have Dr. Drew Pinsky coming on.
Oh, yeah, it's coming up.
He's, I think, a board-certified dermatologist.
Yeah, right.
And no, he's a special guy, and he has a great memory. That's what's really amazing about him.
What did I remember?
Huge dog.
Everything. You remember parts of conversations we had. I'm like, who is this guy?
I know.
It's captivating. Thank you for having me.
All right, buddy.
Say anything Susan. In front of him.
I know. Susan's. Yeah. I remember 25 years ago. It was poor Susan.
All right, everybody. Died here.
Mike, yes. Thanks. Thank you
yes,
all.
Of
you
course.
Live. We'll see you next time. Thanks. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Savon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the thing I want to do by myself, the Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, and his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdairyw.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.